Are book clubs addictive? We'll ask on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Retired psychologist Deborah Van Spybrook spends a lot of time with book clubs. We'll psych that out on Scribble. Three book clubs.
Yes, at the moment, three.
Has it been more?
No, I think that's the tops I've ever done at one time.
Wow.
What is it with you and book clubs, Deb?
I don't know. I just love to read, and I love to talk about books with other people. So.
And you also love to be part of a group. One of the things I remember, you were way back when you were a freshman at Augustana, or a fresh person, I guess. You were in a core class where you and 20 other students had the same religion class, the same history class, and the same freshman English class. And I recall you were one of the people at the end, when it was all over, at the end of the term, begged everybody, let's all rent a house and stay together. Right? And so it doesn't surprise me that you belong to three book clubs, because it's not just the reading, it's the community. And you have always been a community person.
What I thought you were going to say, Tweet, was not that I don't remember begging to live in a house together, which I believe I probably did say that, but we did beg successfully to have another course scheduled for our core group in the winter.
We did.
That wasn't supposed to be
that
there.
That was your fault.
Yeah, it was my fault. So, yes, I do like the community.
You played guitar and wrote songs about staying together. So... So the book club bit doesn't surprise me.
But three, all right, what are the three guilty clubs?
The first one, which I've belonged to for probably a dozen years anyway, is modeled on the Great Books discussion format, and it's the most structured and formal of the three. There's probably a dozen of us, and we meet once a month, and it's 90 minutes long, and each time it's a book of readings around a theme. Like right now we're reading Utopias and Dystopias, and each piece in the book has questions at the back, and we discuss the questions, and it's quite and you have to demonstrate your answer with textual references. And so there are two or three librarians in the group, and
sounds much like a class.
Well, it's very enjoyable. The second group is a neighborhood book group. It could not be farther afield. I mean, this is half the time you talk about the book, but half the time you drink wine and talk about what's going on in your life. And since I moved to my current neighborhood 8 years ago, that has been a really nice way to get to know this. There's only four of us, and so that's a whole different kind of pleasure. And we rotate choosing what we're going to read, and we've read all kinds of things. And I was going to say, the most surprising session we've had with that group was a book of poetry, which I don't know as I've ever been in a book group that chose to read a book of poetry.
I don't think we've ever talked to anybody that has a book club.
It was one of Garrison Keillor's good books for hard times, good poems for hard times,
right,
or something
like
that. And we ended up for 2 hours reading aloud to each other. And we'd never done that before, and it was really special. So that's group number two. Mm-hmm. And group number three is the most recent group that I've joined, and it's through the Figge Art Museum. And they have a book group there that focuses on books about art. And since I've signed on to be a docent there a couple of years ago, I thought, oh, and they have a book group. I want to join. So, and that is, again, very different from the other two in that it's huge. There's probably 25 people that show up every time. And so it's not the kind of discussion that you would have in the other two groups, but I have loved reading the books. They're just, I learn so much from reading those books.
If you want to enjoy Deb and Spybrook's company, don't invite her to a dance or a party. Invite her to a book club.
Well, and there you're not even through with books with three book clubs, because I happen to know that, because I'm sort of in your neighborhood, that you were one of the first people to stick in your front yard a little free library.
Yes, I did.
How long ago was that?
I think that was 2012.
It's just amazing. And it's been successful?
Yes. It's still visited regularly, and I tend to have to replace the children's, but there's one shelf that has children's books and one shelf that has adults.
Grade school kids from Longfellow go through your neighborhood.
I guess, yeah, but they, and I think children are more likely to just take a book and not leave a book, which is fine. So once every couple of months, I go up to Goodwill and I spend $20 and restock. You know, so
do you
fun.
Ever get notes from people who take your books and say, "I really enjoyed this book"? Do you have any idea who, besides school kids, are
surely you have a hidden camera somewhere?
No, I don't. But sometimes, especially in the summer, when I can hear if somebody's there because they'll wheel up their bike or something, I will eavesdrop out the window because I like watching the kids open it up and see what's there. And sometimes they'll sit on the curb and read it. But no, I can't think of a time I ever. Somebody left
note. How many books does a little free library typically have at any one time?
Oh, gosh.
It's not a big space, is it? It's just a little
box.
No,
but I would say there's probably 40 or 50 books.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, they're stuffed in there. So, and sometimes I see people just pull up that aren't from the neighborhood. I think I'm on some kind of national map. And one time I had a guy who was a geocacher. You know what that is?
Yes.
And he wanted to use the little library as a spot to hide whatever geocachers hide. So there was one of those in there for a while.
Okay.
Okay, what is it with you in reading? How did you get started on, how did you get hooked on books?
I was the oldest of five children in a small house, and I needed a way to escape. And I grew up in a small town, and the library was four blocks away. And the librarian was my Sunday school teacher. And so I spent a lot of time in that library and have loved books ever. And I think if I had not gone into the field that I did, I think I would have made a great librarian. I think if I had to choose over again.
That's interesting. I, too, took refuge in books and spent a lot of time in the library, but I'm a loner, and you are a very gregarious person. So I guess these traits show up in various people, that you take refuge in a library and in books.
That's interesting, though, because I would describe myself as kind of a loner, too. I'm much more of an introvert than an extrovert. I'm an introvert with good social
first
skills.
First, I knew it.
I would say that, too, because I've been in the public eye like a sender all my life. But I stay at home. I come to the station. When I was in the Guild, I'd go to the park, and that's it. Didn't belong to any groups of any kind. But yet, you know, I'm very comfortable with people. But given my druthers, give me a book.
I sort of see it as a, to use a battery analogy, some extroverts get their battery charged by being around other people, and when they're alone for too long, they tend to peter out and feel uncomfortable. Because I think introverts have a lower threshold of stimulation, they get more easily overwhelmed. And so I enjoy being around people, but it wears me out after a while. I need to just go home where it's quiet. And
so how does reading a book in a group differ from reading in your little room to escape from your family? I mean, there's something about a book club, about coming.
Yes.
You know, reading is regarded as a kind of lone activity.
I think you feel comfortable in a book club because you know you have something in common with everyone there, and that is you're reading books. or have read a book.
But it's an interesting question whether do you read it differently if you know you're going to discuss it with people.
Well, don't you? I would think.
Yeah, I think. Well, and when I think of the three groups that I'm in, two have structured questions before you ever get there. So right. Then, of course, I'm thinking, oh, we're going to discuss these questions, so I need to think about what the answers are. The more casual one, I might just read it and show up the way I would read a book if I wasn't going to talk about it.
But, so each of your three are different kinds of socialization, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They're quite different.
Go back to the first one again. I had no idea that there was such a thing as the great books. Is that something that's where the books are kind of given to you? And because you say you have books that have questions and answers and discussion?
They aren't given to – you have to purchase them.
But yeah,
they,
I know, but I
think there's a great books website and –
from which you choose
yes,
the books.
And I've been in this.
Or are they chosen for you?
No, we choose. And it takes us about a year to get through one book. So it's
You're
kind
kidding.
Of.
A year?
No,
a year?
Because we only read one piece at a time. And they might have one or two and might have 15 or 20 pieces in this text.
I mean, give us an example.
Yeah.
Of what?
What book has taken you a year to get through?
The one we're currently reading. In fact, I was just looking, because I keep a list of books that I read. But for the Great Books group, I write down each piece that we read as separate, which is kind of cheating. But so we started the Utopia and Dystopia book in November of 2016.
Okay.
And we meet once a month. So there must be 15 different pieces in this book. And so when we get to the end, you know, Hedy Hustedy.
Right.
Hedy is one of the members of this group, and so we always take a picture when we're done. She'll take a picture of us holding the text. So, but I probably have 15 of those books at home, so maybe 15 years I've been in the group.
You started in 2016, and my goodness.
Yes, I'm about – we're almost done with it, and I'm ready to move on from Utopias and Dystopias.
So is the book called Utopias and Dystopias?
Mm-hmm.
And it has – does it have snippets of different Utopias and –
Oh, yeah. It has excerpts from different books.
Right.
I see.
Or articles by written by people. Like one book was about, it was called Keeping Things Whole, and it was about environmentalism. And it started, you know, back in the 1700s. And some of them were really challenging for me to read because I'm not a science person very much. But we all learn, you know, and we have a person who grew up on a farm there and is very knowledgeable about ecosystems. And anyway, it's so different people in the group tend to shine depending on what topic we choose. So
do people in all your three book clubs generally read the stuff they're assigned? The problem I've come across with, I know other people who belong to different book clubs, and they complain constantly because people I didn't get time to read it, or I started it and I didn't like it and I put it down. But you don't sound like you're doing that.
Well, certainly not the Great Books group. Everybody comes prepared. the group at the Figge is such a large group. You go around and make a comment, so you'd better at least have something to say at the beginning.
That was a pretty picture on page 30.
That has not been an issue. And I was in another book group for, oh my gosh, with Nancy Hughes, and it was like all the women at Augustana who started the Women's Studies program, and we only read women authors. And I read all kinds of things I never would have known about because I was in that group. But in that group, too, we all – we're committed readers. We read the stuff.
What are some good books that you could recommend to other people that – you've read in one or the other of these
books. Before you get into that, there's one thing that Deb mentioned along the way that I think has to be brought into focus here. You read how many books a year?
It's a New Year's resolution the last 3 years to read 50.
Okay.
So, and I've made it the last 2 years, and I'm on number 38 for this year.
Okay,
so.
Now recommendations.
which is 49 and three-fourths more than the average person in the United States
reads. Isn't that terrible?
One-fourth of a book a year.
Or people that don't have books in their house. I just can't. Anyway, that's like not having bread or something.
Well, you know, I devour books as bread. Yeah. I read too fast. I read too fast, but I'm anxious to get through and see what they have to say. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I'm done with the book, I have a pretty good general idea, particularly if it's nonfiction. If it's a fiction work, that'll disappear pretty soon.
Okay. I want some good recommendations from Deb.
Okay. So my little neighborhood group.
Right.
A couple of our favorite books have been All the Light We Cannot See.
Who?
Is it Dorr?
Michael Dorr, yeah.
Anthony Dorr. And I've read that book twice.
I've read it too, and I cannot imagine.
Achingly beautiful.
But what's the secret of it? I mean, it. In some ways, it could be a really hokey book, and it isn't.
Oh,
right?
No. It's just... It's so beautifully written.
But I want you to tell me why I like it so much.
I don't know. How would I know why
well,
you like it?
Well, this something like this has been in the news lately. That Little Women by Louisa May Alcott is one of the most popular books ever written.
Right.
Has been from day one. Is still popular. There's a book out now talking about it. And no one can explain why it is so popular because it's fairly ordinary. It's just about four girls growing up, and that's it. And yet it's been translated in every language there is.
Well, to me, you know, as hokey as Uncle Tom's Cabin is, that gets to me every time, too. When I've read that, I've taught it, but I've read it many times. I said, this is stupid. This is idiotic. She's racist. and you get to the end of it, and you're moved.
Yeah.
So that literary criticism per se, and I think that's true in the Dorr book, too, can't explain the power that books, they have a kind of power that just transcends any critical analysis you can make of it.
Well, a man named Ove... I've seldom read a book that had me laughing and crying from chapter to chapter.
Uh-huh.
It was just amazing.
And the sequel is nothing like it.
Oh, no, I wouldn't even touch
sequel?
The sequel.
Right. Yes.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
With the foreign couple as the central characters. Uh-huh. And it's good, but it doesn't...
No, you're not going to touch a man.
So we've got two good books now. Let's have a third.
Another one that all of us loved was Cutting for Stone.
Never heard of it.
Oh, by Abraham Verghese. And that might be, if I had to pick the top five novels that I have read in my entire life, that would be on my shelf.
Tell us about that again.
Cutting for the author is a physician, and it's a complicated story, but it's a book about the death of a nun who falls in love with a doctor, and she's a missionary in Africa. I forget which country in Africa, but part of it is about. And so she dies giving birth to twins. And so the story really is about the two twins who are adopted by other doctors in this missionary hospital in Africa. And their experiences growing up, and part of it is about the politics of, I can't remember which country it is, and eventually the father abandons them. And so part of it, and the doctor's name is Stone. It's kind of like Good Will Hunting. There's the layers of meaning in that title. So Cutting for Stone. So Stone was a surgeon. And there's something in the Hippocratic Oath about thou shalt not cut for stone if you aren't a surgeon. So there's that layer of meeting, but also it was cutting for him to have this whole experience. So there's all these layers of meaning in the title, which I love.
Oh, okay.
Never heard of it.
Oh.
Never heard of
you'd
it.
You'd have to read it. Anyway, we all adored that book, so that would be one of my suggestions.
Don't stop now. What else?
Well, I'm thinking in the Figgy group, one of the ones that I really loved, just because it was well written, was called The Vanishing Velasquez. So Velasquez was a Spanish painter in the 14 or 1500s.
I've heard of that.
He was, yes, and so the story has multiple levels. One is you learn about Velázquez and what a genius he was, and what it was like to live in a Spanish court where he spent his entire life. And part of it, and another big part of it, is the question of how can you tell if an artwork is real, and or if it's a fake. And there's a character, and I think the story is true, of this man in the 19th century who discovers a painting that he is convinced is by Velázquez, but Velázquez never signed his paintings because he only painted for the king and everybody knew it was him. And so there's this story of how he goes through trying to validate that this painting is genuine, and it gets stolen from him, and he ends up in jail, and all these things happen to him, and it's fascinating. So I learned a lot about real art and fake art, and how do you determine? But the thing that I loved the most was I didn't know this artist much at all, and I was so fascinated by the author's descriptions of these paintings that I went off, as I often do, down a rabbit hole studying about Velázquez. And I went in April. The Figgy had a trip to New York City. And I ended up going to the Met, and I thought, I'm never going to see these paintings because they never left Spain. You know, they're almost all in the, is it the Prado? What's in Spain? And so I'm wandering through the Met in the European section, and I happen to walk up to a guard, and I say, by any chance, do you have any Velázquez paintings? And he points to the left. He goes, right around the corner, there's a whole room full of them. And I was so thrilled, and I knew every single one because I'd read this book, and I was like, look at how the eyes, no matter where you stand, they follow you. And it was like, so I was just, you know, I'm a nerd. It was thrilling to me. So I loved that book. And we've read a number of interesting books. We read one about, it was called Mad Enchantment, and it was about Monet's painting of the water lilies. And I didn't know much about that. And,
well, that's the interesting
just books
thing.
About Peggy Guggenheim and what a odd, crazy person she was. And so,
Books are doorways. They really are.
Yes.
They just lead you into all sorts of interesting things.
And they're really beginnings, not endings.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Suddenly you're going down a whole new path that you never even knew existed before.
That's true, and I have been led down that path many, many times.
So, Deb, obviously you read, if you read 50 books a year, you read more than your book club reads. How do you pick other books? I know Wooten goes by, and if a book whistles at him, he'll buy it. But
he's
found some good books that way, but how do you?
I don't have a method.
I mean, do you go to a store and look at, or do you have authors you look for, or?
I don't. Sometimes I read reviews, or somebody will tell me about a book, or somebody will loan me one, or one lands in my little free library. One of my favorites came from it was, what was the name of that store?
So you use your little free library too, what?
Oh, sure. Finding Noof, Nouf. And that was a novel about a young woman in an Arab country where, you know, she is from a wealthy family and she never goes out without a veil and she disappears. So it's like it's a mystery, but it's all about this culture of, I think it was Saudi Arabia maybe, where she goes out in the desert and disappears. And so that was an interesting, I loved that book. Yeah, and that was in my little library, Finding Noof.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for journals. I read reviews. And I read a review and I think I've got to have this book in my hands before the day is over. Because it's, you know, it obviously can tell me something I would very much like to know. And the trouble is I read too many journals, so I have too many books.
Well, and if you order books on Amazon, then they start sending you recommendations or, you know, and the New York Times, I usually read, you know, here's the top 10 books.
Have you ever read a book that changed the direction of your life after which you, I mean, every book does in a way, right? It sends you down the Velázquez book, for instance.
Yeah.
But a book that just all of a sudden the world is different?
Huh. That's an interesting question.
Yeah, that's. But there have been books like that.
The one that comes to mind was when I read a long, long time ago was Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Oh, yeah. That would do it.
That crystallized for me that kind of classic romantic dilemma or tension right. that I always have felt inside of myself. And I think I'm more on the romantic side. But that the flip side of quality is caring, how much caring has gone into whatever the product is, which made just mm-hmm. an astounding, it was like, it just felt, it resonated as so true for me.
I think that's mm-hmm. not only a book for you, but for others too. It's the kind of book which if you were waiting in a bus station for a bus and you saw somebody next to you reading it, you would say, I found another one, right? I mean, it is a book that...
Yeah.
that people mm-hmm. shared and mm-hmm. and became a member of a society who've read The Zen and the Art of mm-hmm. Motorcycle Maintenance.
In fact, I have to say, can I say one other thing about my great books discussion
yes.
group? Once a year we go off topic and we choose a whole book to read. You know, and 1 year it was Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. 1 year it was Umberto Eco, The Name of the Rose.
Name of the Rose.
Oh,
right.
Shoot me now.
And a great
1 year
book.
It was Proust.
Wow.
I hated Proust.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah,
not
1 year it was. So they're books that are hard to get through without company, you know? but we read Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, and that was fun to read together. Yeah. Yeah.
The Name of the Rose was fascinating because he got into medieval philosophy and literature and did all sorts of things.
I didn't know any of the references, so it was like, what, over my head.
No, but it's, mm-hmm. I thought, I got to go back and look up this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then life itself, I studied biology. In college, graduated in 50, and I ran across a book called Life Itself. It was about cell biology, and I was absolutely staggered because the field had flown so far beyond my comprehension, I could not believe it. And I read every page of that thinking, this is incredible. Hmm. How could I call myself a biologist and not know anything? And a biology teacher I was talking to him about cell biology. He says, how would you like to go to class on a Monday and say, remember what I told you on Friday? Forget it.
That was Rick Turnquist.
Yeah, Turnquist.
He took all his complaint because so much was new in this last week.
Yeah, it just the field just exploded, and it was a revelation to read that book. Well, Deb, mm-hmm. I must say, this has been very entertaining.
Already?
Oh, yeah, we're done. We're overdone, as a matter of fact.
But,
but let us know if you find a new book club. I mean, it would be your 50 books a year and your 3 clubs. How do you have time for dinner?
You can do both at the same time.
Well, you're obviously a talented person. Deb Van Spybrook is our visitor today, aficionado of book clubs. That'll do it for now. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll be back next week with another issue of Scribble, and we hope to have your company then.